Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where today we're welcoming back a guest for the third time. It's been just over a year, I think 1 month over 1 year since we last spoke to Henrik Zeeberg, the macroeconomist who was calling for gold to $800, I think it was. So Henrik, welcome back onto the podcast. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm good.
Good. Well, it's good to be talking to you again. And joining me as my co-host today, we have Elmer. Elmer, how are you doing?
Doing well. Good to be here. How
Excellent.
Are you?
Yes, very good. Very good. Thank you. So the first thing, Henrik, I have to jump in and ask you straight away, are you still calling? Are you still short on gold? Are you still calling for gold to 800, or has your view changed in the last 12 months?
No, it hasn't. Okay. And actually, if we look at it, you know, it's the top in gold was back in August of 2020. So it hasn't. What has surprised me, and I think other analysts out there, is the strength of the economic boom that was created after the COVID crisis, or the inflationary bust, bounce that we saw. But as we can all see, also, gold really hasn't paid much attention to that. So actually, you know, of course, it did rally into the 2070, but that lies months or even a year, more than a year back now. And what we have ahead of us is not more of the same. That's the opposite. And that's why I also think gold is going to suffer really hard in the coming bust.
Okay, so gold, still short on gold, short-term, bullish gold, long-term, looking for those once-in-a-lifetime, let's say, opportunities once you're still on the deflationary bust in the short term. Is that right?
Well, in the short term is maybe incorrect to say, because I, you know, define short term to the next 3 months or so, and I wouldn't expect to see the bust developing in the next 3 months. But and there are reasons for that, and I will show that in the charts here. But yes, we are going to see a bust, just like what we've seen, and unprecedented bounce, you know, coming out from this crisis. We are going to see the pendulum swing to the other side, which will then create a bust. And, you know, we can get into the details around that, but that's what I see.
Okay, a bust. So what time have you shifted your timeline a little bit then? When would you see this bust?
Well, yeah, as I said, I was surprised about, you know, and I think others also could say that they were the same, by the magnitude of this, and also the size of the stimulus and everything that was coming out, and then also the reaction, the market, the extreme FOMO, and the rally in the stock market and all that, which of course is something. So people may say, well, that will invalidate your theory, but I think it has postponed it. It hasn't invalidated it, and actually I think as the bubble has grown bigger, it is something also. It's also going to be a bigger bust, and I think the timeline is within the next 6 to 9 months.
Okay, 6 to 9 months. Okay, and is this based? I assume it is based on technical analysis. But what about the famous black swan event? Does something need to spark it?
But it's always like this with the black swans. They arise from something. So you have an environment, an economic environment, where things starts to tighten, and that's when you start to see companies get into problems. So it is not that, like, you know, something springs out of, you know, nowhere and then you have a major problem. Yeah, well, you could say COVID was, but that wasn't really an economic phenomenon. We can argue whether it was actually a recession. We only had 2 months of negative GDP print. But surely we saw the administrations around the world did act like this was the end of the world. But it wasn't, you know, something that brought down demand in a huge manner. So when I see, you know, black swans, they are something that arise from an economic environment which tightens, mostly because of the strength in the dollar, or because the Feds become more hawkish, starts to withdraw on stimulus, or eventually also actually become hawkish and tighten the monetary policy. And that's when we start to see companies get into problems that have been merely and mostly living on the stimulus and the on the you know you can say on the will of the Fed, on the free money. And if you look into the S&P 500 today, you will see a lot of companies which are living on exactly that, on the, you know, if money were not for free, then they would be in more troubles than what they appear to be.
Henrik, could you, just before we go into the technical stuff, could you paint a little bit more of a picture of what you think that would look like, the bad situation exactly? Sorry, I'm just not really...
No, sure. No, so if it's from a timing perspective, what I'm seeing here now is that we had this major boom in the economic climate. We've seen, you know, this extreme stimulus coming in and stimulating, you know, stock markets and economies, and we have all, and then we've seen the inflation coming out, which I still see as transitory, you know, transitory of various lengths. But I think it's something that is will be reduced or get to go to the deflationary scenario when we see the supply and demand situation loosen up. And I see this happening over the next coming 6 months or something like that, and then we'll start to see the pendulum swinging the other direction. So this is in terms of the timeline. I don't know if you asked why we're going to see that, or what was your question about, Elmer?
Yeah, I was just trying to see, you're painting this kind of bad situation for the companies that have been relying on the stimulus money for right now. And I was just wondering if you could paint more what that actually looks like. But this is also...
Yeah, sure. But we can also take a look at that. I mean, obviously, when you have around the world, you will see that the M&A activities are skyrocketing. Mm. Yeah. Every small startup who is asking for money can get the money, because when the interest rate goes towards zero, valuations goes to infinity. And that's the situation we have right now. You have extreme FOMO. You got, you know, investors with a lot of money standing on the sidelines saying, hey, find me the next, you know, golden egg, and please invest my money into that. And that's why you'll see a lot of, you know, small companies, you know, explode up in valuation. A lot of money is falling into them. But are they really, you know, would they cope in a world of 2 or 3%, you know, interest rate? So that's what I see also at the bigger companies, also that you see companies, I don't want to mention any names here, but I see bigger companies also, you know, having, you know, questionable investments plans, and also a situation where the free money is actually keeping their hand under the company.
Okay. Okay. Well, shall we take a look at some of the rationale? I mean, you mentioned the S&P 500, and when I look at that chart, it does scare me, because you look at it and you scale right out and you go right back to the dot-com boom and bust, and you look at what that looks like on the chart, and you could almost say it's a tiny little blip compared to where it is now. The chart looks extremely, extremely scary. And you mentioned about this sort of tightening. That saying, show me the charts and I'll tell you the news, is that where we're sort of heading?
Well, I think that you're right on looking at the chart in that way, because you've never seen a parabolic move like this, and then it's kind of just plateaued at a higher level. You always see, you know, you get a very, very strong reaction to the opposite side. And we have to question ourselves, what is it that drives these valuations right now? I see the valuation levels is that you have nowhere else to turn with your money. You can't go nowhere, except for getting into, stocks or to whatever kind of questionable, asset that you want to jump into. So that's also why we see NFTs, you know, these non-fungible tokens, you know, explode in values. We see artworks, you know, explode in values, Pokemon cards and whatever. And all of these things, those are indications that we also saw back in 2000. So yes, I do definitely believe that you should compare those two and then say, okay, this time is just even bigger. And no, the Fed will not be able to keep their hands under it, because at some point, if inflation started, let's put it like this. I mean, if they get inflation, they keep stimulating, well, then you'll see rates go up at some point. And no, the Fed will not be able to keep rates artificially low, because the rates are set by the market. So if rates starts to go up, then you'll have to see that the valuations will come down. So it's pretty simple. So either when you have a development like this, where money printing has been driving the valuation, you will either see that it will either be the Fed, the central banks, that will put a stop to this by becoming hawkish at some point and then starting becoming tightening, or you will see it explode at some point. And that there is only these two, you know, and an explosion in this will not be in immediate inflation. And a bursting bubble of this magnitude will be hugely deflationary.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think, can we go to the S&P 500? I think it's slide 6.
Yes, sure. But can I maybe...
Go on.
Yeah, but I want to show one thing first, if that's okay, sure. Mark. I mean, one of these things, I look at, you know, at markets with, from a structural perspective on the, you know, why turn to fundamental analysis when you can get all the information that is in the market from the charts, because the charts are really where, you know, people, millions and billions of interactions, transactions are going on. And that's why the information is right there. And I turn to the structurally that, you know, when a lot of people come together, patterns emerge. Think of, you know, birds in the sky or fish in the steam, you know. There are patterns coming out, and these patterns can be read. And this is the most telling picture I've, you know, ever seen, which is the Vanguard Emerging Markets. And you actually have copper, which looks just exactly like this. And this is, to me, which tells me we have something really bad in front of us, ahead of us. If we see to the left, we have 2008, 2009. You see a very nice correctional move in an A way, which often has a three-way move, which is the A, B, and a C. Then we've been going sideways for long, up and sideways since 2009, up in what was first an A, and then a clear three-way B, as a B wave, and then now into a rising wedge, which will take us one move higher into the fifth wave, up to around the top of where we started back in 2008, before we'll see the C wave develop, which by definition of the Elliott wave is more... is stronger and more severe than the A wave, more impulsive. So you can say, well, you know, what is this? Well, this is the technical way of reading what could be ahead of us, and the fundamentals will then, you know, be the outcome of what you see from such a technical analysis.
And this is Elliott wave theory, isn't it, that we're looking at here? Plus, is that Fibonacci's as well on the screen?
Yeah, Fibonacci's are a part of the Elliott wave theory. And what you often see is that, so first of all, you know, as I said, you have the A waves, and then often you'll see C waves, which will develop in the same length. And there are some other, you know, so this is a flat correction, as it's called. And that means that the C wave should probably take us lower than where we were back in 2009. But the most telling one here is the rising wedge. The rising wedge that you have out here with the bull pennant that we're in right now is what tells me that we are coming to an end. This is coming to an end. And what we're probably going to see is a move here in emerging markets up to the top above the trend line. And then it's going to roll over quite forcefully. And that will be the beginning of it. Okay. But if you look to copper, which we often say, well, that's the Dr. Copper, that tells us about the state of the economy. Mm. There is sort of the same kind of pattern emerging. Nobody can, you know, predict the future, but these patterns here have often fallen out, and the rising wedges are some of the most reliable patterns in technical analysis. And if this is correct, well, then copper should also be rolling over quite significantly, or actually, you know, crashing. And we are talking about sometime Q1, Q2 of 2022.
Okay. I wonder if, I don't know, Elmer, if you're familiar with Elliott wave theory and Fibonacci's. I am, because I watch a lot of chart people, but I wonder if it's worth just explaining briefly what they are.
Yeah, go for that. Yeah. I'd be interested.
No, so basically it's about that, you know, when you pull enough people together, when big numbers, you know, emerge, you will actually be able to observe patterns. Patterns emerge because you and I and the three of us, we will all go through the same cycle. We'll go from being over optimistic and then all the way through down to over pessimistic, and all the things, all the phases that are in between there. So if we kind of cycle between that all, if you take that and you add that up into a, you know, people, then you'll see patterns emerge. That's physics. So if you do that, then you will actually see that pattern can emerge from the interaction of people in the stock market. And here we have, you know, billions of interactions. Then there's one thing that we see very often when Elliott wave is being utilized, is that people take a 4-hour chart or something like that and then put in 1, 2, 3, 5 or whatever. It's, you know, the different kind of numbers. I don't believe in that. I believe in very long-term perspectives, first of all, because that's where it's strongest. Second of all, you need to have a cross-market, cross-asset alignment. So you can have that, you know, if gold goes up, that the dollar will, you know, short-term you can, but on long-term you'll see gold go up, then you'll see the dollar being going down on an average basis on a bigger picture. So you need to have that the general economic correlations that have existed for a long time and that make sense also exist if you look across, you know, a lot of charts. Mm-hmm. And this is how I go about that. That's why, you know, copper and emerging market, it makes sense. If emerging market starts to crash, well, the demand for copper may not be, you know, as large. And probably we should see a stronger dollar and all of, you know, things that, you know, will go in the opposite or the same direction as you, whatever it is that we look at. Mm-hmm. But the patterns itself, like something like a rising wedge, is something that can stand by itself. It doesn't need to have, you know, and a rising wedge, just like what we see on emerging markets here, is something that when it reaches the highest point here in wave 5 of C, well, then the crash, that this is a very definition of an ending trend. Mm-hmm. That means the emerging market is ending its trend upwards, and the same goes for copper.
Yeah, I think the pattern thing is very very strong, particularly in Fibonacci's. I mean, that's like a mathematical equation, isn't it, that was developed, well, a long time ago by, I don't remember, what was his first name? It's an Italian... Fibonacci. Yeah. Looking at patterns in nature, and you mentioned birds there as well, and it's kind of scary to think maybe the whole universe is, you know, linked in and intertwined, and things happen just because it's the right time to happen. I mean, it's probably true in nature, but let's not go down the rabbit hole of... we're living in a simulation. I want to kind of avoid.
That's not where I'm not living. I'm not in that. I'm just thinking that, you know, again, pulling, you know, a lot of people together with the same kind of cycle will create patterns. Mm-hmm. And you can show that also from some physical, you know, illustrations, but then that's too long to go for today.
Yeah, for sure.
Henrik, just a quick interruption before we move on. I'm just curious, because what would you say is the strongest argument of those people that maybe disagree with your prediction? Do you think there's even a strong argument that does exist? Could you try and lay that out?
It depends on what where they come from. It depends on what kind of, you know, argument they will have against it. They say, well, the Fed is going to save it. I'll say, okay, so then tell me why it was that before we went into the COVID crisis, everybody told me that the Fed was full in and wouldn't allow any kind of drop. I mean, it is simply too much of, you know, a belief that the Fed can, you know, micromanage the bigger picture. And, you know, when fear grips people, that's something that can, you know, go a long way, and you know it'll become self-reinforcing. And so this about the Fed, you know, will not allow it. That one I never buy. I just simply say, well, you know, study it back in time, you'll see how many times they've promised to stand behind and they've never been able to. So when they say, well, you won't have deflation, you'll have inflation, then I'll say, okay, so what happens? Why do we have inflation right now? You have inflation because ships, cargo ships, are lying outside the ports of the world and not able to, and you got supply chains broken down while you stimulated the economy on the demand side to an extreme level. So what you see is that, you know, at some point, you will see supply coming back up, because if there's an over-demand of things and you earn an extraordinary profits, I tell you, there will be suppliers all over the world which will build supplies and capacity. And that's what they're doing right now. The question is then, will the demand still be there if its stimulus we created after COVID is not going to be there? And that's why I'm thinking that people are thinking this as, okay, so it's kind of self-reinforcing. No, it doesn't need to be, because there are, you know, underlying effects in the economy, which is basically demand and supply. And you can show that from easy, Keynesian models like the ASAD model, and actually show, well, there is a dynamics in the economy which needs to be taken into account. So the one thing is, you're not getting inflation in a world that is soaked with debt like what we have today. Yeah. And if you say money printing is going to do it, I'll say point to Japan and say their money printing experiment started in the late 1980s. So I simply don't buy any of the premises. I mean, if they say they can't, it won't happen. I'll say, okay. So the charts tell me that it will happen, and we are definitely getting into extreme bubble territory. Everything, NFTs and all. We have all the indications of 1999 and 2000 bubble, the .com bubble, and we have evaluation levels that go far beyond that. And we start to hear of, you know, companies don't need to earn money anymore. They don't need to. It's just about, you know, exposure on the in the market and the like. I mean, we got all the indications, and here we are with a pendulum potentially swinging the other direction again. So I simply don't buy the premise. Or if there's any argument I haven't heard, I mean, I'll love to hear it.
Do you ultimately think the dollar will fail?
Well, I got a picture of the, first of all, the dollar is not failing right now. I mean, we had a call here. Let me just jump down to that. Mm-hmm. At the SeabrookReport.com, we had the start of this bull market had the call, and that's based on a range of Elliott wave things. Again, what I see is that we have had a bull market since ever they started to print money. So the whole fundamental narrative there simply doesn't hold water. I mean, we went from around, 70 back in 2008, and then we've seen a bull market. We're currently around 96. And what I see here is a very clear pattern emerging, which is to me a first A in a Elliott wave. And this, so again, these are aligned with all the charts that you see. So you had a first wave, second wave, then you had a third wave going up here into 2017, then you had a decline into 18. And this, which is an A, B, and a C, which is the wave four. And now we're going to see a strong rally like what we have here, moving all the way up to 111. So around that area, I think that's my best guess, and also based on the euro dollar, which will then take it down to around below 0.9. Will it fail? What should be the alternative to the dollar?
Well, this is so. I think it will fail, and I think my theory is that we'll move to digital. The last thing to be digitized is money, and I think we're going to move to CBDCs, i.e., a digital dollar, digital euro, digital pound. And I actually feel that'll be tethered to something, and it might be back on the gold standard, or, and I know you won't like to hear this, it might be on Bitcoin.
No, that's fine. I like a good argument.
Yeah, but you see, Bitcoin, you see, it could be the strength for the US, because I think it's pretty, who knows how much gold is left in Fort Knox. We do know that the Russians and the Chinese have been buying up gold, so they could back a currency against gold, where if they've banned Bitcoin. So it could be that a new digital dollar, in my opinion, could be tethered to Bitcoin. That could give the United States that kind of edge, if you like, over China, who probably hold a lot more gold than the United States. But ultimately, I do see the I see the dollar failing, and I see a new I see a monetary
shift. But how will it fail? I need to ask you, how will it? I mean, if you're saying we're going to see a monetary reset, then I agree with you.
Right.
But you will not see that in a deflationary world where the dollar is going up, because the U.S. has absolutely now, the administration has absolutely no reason to put in a monetary reform right now as the dollar is strengthening.
Sure.
So it will do that when the dollar is declining. But you could, as we both can see right now, it has had a strong rally over this year. And so it's not failing right now. It's strength.
Yeah, I agree. It's not failing right now. I don't think it's going to happen immediately. Longer term.
If you look at my arrow here, what I'm saying is the Fed will reverse on the current path that they have right now. They will need to crush it, because what is happening right now, and if you see the correlation between how emerging markets is doing, how the growth of the world is doing compared to the strength of the dollar. For as long as the dollar is strengthening, that's a stranglehold on the rest of the world and the growth of the world. So when that's strengthening, then you're going to see that at some point the Fed will have to say, okay, this is ending bad, because we are actually, you know, choking the growth of the world. And that's why I'm putting in here Fed reverses at some point. I say it's around 111. But that will be something that is managed. That's something that they will have to do, because otherwise growth will not come back. And this time around, I agree that there will be inflation. We will see, and that's back to my secular bottom thinking of when we'll see inflation. But they will have to do that at some point. But that's simply to save the world in terms of what they also did back in what they've done earlier as well. So, yeah, go on, sorry.
So when you say Fed reverse, what do you mean on that reverse on their policy?
Yes. So right. Going from where they are right now, so that's why I'm actually saying that they are behind the curve, but in the manner that they are starting to think about tightening when the dollar is going up. And actually, right now, if you look at at the Brazilian real, if you look at the South African rand, if you look at the Turkish lira, some of these currencies, they do absolutely not like what they see. And if you are living in Brazil right now, you have to buy petrol. You have to, you know, purchase anything that is commodity related, which is everything that we buy. Well, then you will see that the prices are rising. And that's why that's the problem. That will be the problem of this. That's the stranglehold of this by the end of the day. So that's why at some point this is going to be, and that's back to the emerging markets, which is the reason I started out by showing that, is right now the strength of the dollar that I see go up is so to speak, not a problem until it becomes a problem. It becomes a problem all of a sudden at a certain level, at a certain, for some reason, that may be the black swan or whatever it could be. You know, and it will be independently when we see it. So, for instance, you could say that Turkey right now have seen their black swan. They've started their liquidity and crisis unfolding. I see 25-50% rise in the dollar versus the Brazilian real and other currencies. All of this is going to put stranglehold on the world, which is why emerging markets is not going to like it. That's why it's going to break at some point.
Okay. So you see during this you see strength in the dollar short term, is that right? Or strength in everything else short term?
I see the dollar now, the path has started. And what I've been telling my subscribers is everything will be dancing at the tune of the dollar. And when it starts to rise, that will cause problems in the world. That will become a liability to the growth in the world. And this will keep strengthening for some time. At some point, it's going to cause a problem in the world. That's where we see the markets, for instance, as I said, you know, the emerging market, let me just show you that. We'll see also copper having one more bounce. But at some point, the strength of the dollar is going to become that liability. And then you'll see, and the same for commodities. Yeah, I don't want to get into that. But so I see a strengthening in the dollar for the next coming 3, 4, 5, 6 months.
Okay.
And in the same time frame, you will see also strength in S&P, for instance. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see 5,100, 5,200 on the S&P. I think we're going to see about 40,000 on the Dow. And you know, we're going to see a magnificent, you know, strong bounce here, or a strong fifth rally, a wave rally, before we're going to see it roll over. And the rolling over will be because of, you know, by the end of the day, if it's really analyzed, because of the strength of the dollar.
Okay. So, but does that not go against the kind of theory of when it's a risk on, if the S&P is still rising, it's generally a risk on environment, isn't it? That the dollar doesn't do as well in those environments.
But there isn't a one-to-one correlation between that. If you look at it, you won't see a one-to-one. So you can easily have 3 to 5 months to a period where you'll see the dollar and the S&P, and you'll have seen that many times over the last. So you can easily see that. But this is, of course, so the reason why we see this in the S&P, is I think it's, you know, it's the last part of the bubble that needs to, you know, the FOMO, the you know, money is free. And you have, we still haven't seen the Fed, you know, actually tightening anything. They are doing the slightest of taperings, which is really nothing.
So you see just one quick question. Do you see a final blow off top, in so to speak?
Yeah, 5,100, 5,200 on the S&P, and I see for the DAX, it'll probably reach around 18,000. So it's not just in the US, and the Dow probably around 40,000.
Okay.
Yeah. Could I just, Henrik, a quick question just on Fed policy and the general politics around it as well. Why do you think the Fed is generally so averse to tightening, and also just your general thoughts on Jerome Powell being kept? Any takes on that? I just kind of want to hear your thoughts.
On the political side, with him being kept, I mean, I don't think anybody else could, you know, do a worse or a better job than he is, because they know that if they do too much, they are absolutely aware that they have the biggest bubble on hand. but they don't do. They're damned if they do, or they're damned if they don't.
Exactly.
That's their. So you got two buttons every morning. You get in at work. You got one that says postpone it for until tomorrow, and you got one that, you know, take the crisis today. Mm-hmm. And then you'll push postpone for as long as it go, and then you'll start to see inflation coming up and flashing right in your face, and the politician will start, you know, grilling you on the hearings, and you'll have to say, okay, we will need to start doing something about this. But he knows, and that's why they are reluctantly, you know, moving away from the transitory. I think he knows the dynamic effects. He knows the dynamic effects. He's much smarter than I am, of the economy, and knows that the pendulum has swung one way, but it can come very fast the other direction. If you have a situation where the Fed starts to become hawkish, the dollar is going up, the China real estate bubble is bursting. And in general, you'll see that the business cycle is turning. You can see that by the credit impulse of China. You will see that we could get a very perfect deflationary bust, a perfect, you know, a blow to the economy. And then there may be several reasons, whatever, you know, the media is going to call as to why we saw that top. But the reason will be the house of cards, the foundation that it's standing on is becoming increasingly weak. So they know at the Fed, they can't do too much. They hope that they can taper as slightly and as little so that the market won't notice and that the economy will then stand on its two own legs. But the thing is, with the amount of debt in the world and the debt that the QE has created, it's not able to stand on its own two legs anymore. And with the valuations levels are not able to be maintained at these levels if there's no stimulus.
Debt was it 130% of GDP in the United States, I think.
So, yeah, I think something like that right now. Yeah.
Impossible situation. How you measure it.
Yeah. I think it's more than that, actually, but it depends on which measure you take.
Sure.
I think, you know, if you look to 1929, it's like 60, 70% higher than that. Similar goes to 2007. And 2000, also for some measures, we are way beyond that. So everybody knew 1929 was a bubble. Everybody knows today that 2000 was a bubble. And we also talk about 2007 as a bubble. So why is it that nobody can see this, which by any measure and has all indications is a bubble? And yet we have people saying, okay, the outcome of this is going to be inflation. Mm. It wasn't inflation back in the 30s. It wasn't inflation in 2000. It wasn't inflation in 2007. When a bubble bursts, it's deflationary first. But that comes back to the whole story of what I think is going to happen then. Because, you know, for what we see in commodities also, and again, based on structures, is that you see that we're probably going to see a strong rollover of commodities and of oil into a new low. This is the GSCI commodity index. So simply telling us, you know, prices have been going down on commodities, and I think we're going to see a final bust of this after a few months more of rally. I think there's one more high in this. But then the thing is, and this is going to be the scary part of this, the deflationary bust is going to be the first phase of this. That's when the air goes out of the bubble, and that'll be quite, you know, that'll move quite fast and very deep. But the thing is that when the only thing they can do then, let's think, you know, 6-9 months down the road, is to try to stimulate the economy once again. But here you will have an economy which by the latest CPI numbers probably still are quite high at that point. So their hands will be a bit more tied this time around. So, and if and when, and then when, of course, they start to then do something about it, I think we're going to see a huge and a fast response in commodities. And that's where I think inflation will start for real. What I mean of inflation starting for real is the opposite scenario of what we had in 1982. So you're going to see back then when Folger, he killed inflation by hiking rates. What I think you're going to see this time around is the opposite. A new regime that will go on for years will develop.
Okay.
And that will probably have to do with what kind of tool they will take use of.
So would you see a deflationary environment for quite a while?
No, I see a deflationary environment for 6-9 months maximum. 6-9 months.
Okay. And then inflation will really take hold.
And then you'll see inflation really tickle. Yes.
Okay.
That's when, and that's, but that's part again of the bottoming signs that I see in terms of, first of all, for all commodities, and what I see also for TLTs and for other that, and especially for the German Bund, which looks like it has in you know, a lot of another move lower. So it means that it could be, you know, it's a deflationary period, but then it seems like it could be a major, major bottom we could see a few years down the road.
Okay. So, I mean, I agree with you about the Fed sort of being stuck between a rock and a hard place. Do you feel they've lost control or not quite yet? They're still sort of hanging in there.
But the minute we're not able to, the minute that they engage in this bubble economics, where they kind of said, okay, I will just leave it to my predecessor, the next guy after me, in terms of taking care of this. I mean, Folger, he had the guts to get in and then say, okay, I'm going to raise rates, and it's going to cause a recession. Boom, he did it. And he solved the problem. This time around, we have somebody who doesn't dare do that. And the bigger the bubble has become, the more of a systemic problem it has become. So they are feared. They're scared. They're definitely scared. And what they need to do was to, you know, return and say, hey, you know, markets need to correct. They could do that if they had done that back in after 2000 and before after the dot-com crisis, but they lowered rates too much, too low. And then we got the next bubble. Then they lowered even more, and they came up with this fantastic idea of starting to print money, because then we can raise valuations, and people will become richer, and then obviously the trickle-down economic starts. Well, that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And now they're just into bubble economics, which says that, you know, one day the bubble is going to burst, and it's only going to burst because they do it, or because they'll be it will come upon them, and that will really be a bad thing if that gets to it.
Okay.
So I think it'll be them. I think it'll be the Fed who does it, because they will be forced by the numbers inflation to do something about it. They can, and also by the low numbers of employment with the dual mandate, they can defend for much longer that, you know, they stimulate the economy to the degree they do.
Mm-hmm. So how does gold fit into this picture then? And how are you positioning yourself based on your theory to capitalize on this?
First of all, I've been short euro, and I am short euro with a major position. Okay. And that is going quite well. And I expect much more. That's what you see right here. And I expect it to this level we had back in 2000, 2002. Long TLT. And you'll say, well, but you're expecting your stocks moving higher. Yes, I do for now, for a short time frame. But I think with the current sentiments that we've seen back in 2007 and 11, 13, 18, and yet here again in October of 2021 was the lowest we've ever done for this period back. And that was a good time to buy. And that's when I bought that. So I said, okay, I know the markets are not going to crash tomorrow. That's not why I'm positioning, but I'm positioning because the sentiment is so bad. And also because it can take a little while before we see the takeoff in TLT until we see the actual crash in the market. So we can easily see that for next, you know, moving up or sideways here for a few months. But I think there's a lot of upside in the TLT for the coming months and years, next few years, actually. Mm-hmm. So long dollar, short euro, long TLT. What I see in gold is exactly the same kind of picture that we saw over here. We had the Elliott wave is quite telling here. We have an A. Something that takes off with a three-wave move is never a new, and yes, it is a bull market, but it's not the new takeoff. It's not the new move up. And in Elliott waves, it always comes in A's, B's, and in C's. And there are many reasons why I think that, but I stand by this. I say below 1,000 is where I see it. The real demand zone we need to touch is this. And why should it get down there? Well, if you think of a liquidity crisis, the reason why, let me start there. If you think of why people hold gold, the old saying was, you know, gold is what you need to hold because that is, you know, will ensure liquidity in a time of, you know, lack of liquidity. And lack of liquidity is exactly what we may come to see for certain countries. If, you know, if the Turkish situation is developing into other countries, which I fear it may, and you see it just, you know, going up against the Brazilian real with 25-30% or something like that, you will have a lot of people out in the world who will probably need to sell gold. So I think that's it. I mean, in a deflationary environment, gold is not doing well. And you had, you know, a 30-something percent drop here back in 3 to 4, and in 2008, from March to until October. You had a decline of 30-something percent from 2011 into 16, 15. And I don't see why we couldn't have a 40% decline in the worst deflationary drop we're going to see since the 1929. That's what I see.
Okay.
And do you liquidity sold off? Yeah.
And do you see a 1929 scenario coming on?
I don't see a 1929 scenario coming on in the way that we're going to see a depression unfolding for as long.
Okay.
But I think we're going to see a rather large decline in the stock market, and again coming back to the parabolic move that it has. We've never seen anything moving parabolic and then plateauing higher. That's wishful thinking. So what we often see is that moving up higher, then it drops really deep and hard. How hard, how low are we going to see 90% drop in the stock market? I hope not, but could we see 60%? I think that would be probable.
Okay.
50%, I would see even as likely.
Okay. And then moving forward, then as we have this deflationary bust, then go into the inflationary environment. How long do you see that inflationary environment going on for? And is that when you think we would move to this monetary reset?
So yes, that's exactly where you are. I think you would. So this is what I kind of try to put up here. So until now, we have had a deflationary environment. So with commodities moving lower, and we see sometimes it moves up and then it goes down, but the general trend is down. Some people then argue, well, we had the bottom back in of the COVID crisis. I say we don't, because we have not seen the debt levels come down. We have not seen we're not seeing the levels that we need to be reached in terms of various measures that I use. So what I think is going to happen is we're going to see this deflationary bust, which will take us into a secular low in inflation. And that's when it will change in terms of commodities. They will then start to move higher. But the structural damages to the economy, like what we see in demand and supply, what we see with businesses going out of business and the like, whether it's due to COVID or whatever restrictions or whatever it may be, but also due to the fact that we see a bust developing. Well, that's not something that will just be corrected, and we can see that with this demand and supply situation right now. That's something that's going to last for a longer time. Sorry, I need some water here. And that's why I think you will see that the takeoff, the birth of the new, what I call the new inflationary regime, is going to be born in a stagflationary environment. If you think of that, that's actually also what we kind of saw the volatility we had back in the 1970s, I think, back then. So that we are seeing inflation in the commodities start to take off first, which will make it more expensive for people to exist, to consume. And still, the economy will not be boosted because even though we provide stimulus, we'll still need to see some of the supply and demand issues to be solved. And you will see that the economy is also like a super tank. It doesn't turn overnight. Prices on commodities, they can turn fairly quick, whereas the super tanker probably will take some more time. And that's why I think we're going to see a stagflationary environment for a certain amount of time, which will be fantastic for gold, which will be fantastic for bitcoins. But then I think the inflationary environment will start, which will then be a period of time where, and that can be 23, 24, something like that, where we're going to see, prices or inflation will then gradually start to move up, opposite from what we've seen from 1982. And then it'll be a new regime defined by Kondratiev spring. And then will last, for quite some time out in the future.
I was just curious about why the skepticism on the euro's future as it, I would say, outcompeting the United States dollar. By the way, you didn't elaborate too much on that. I was just curious.
No, right. Because you got a fundamental unhealthy situation. You got a situation where you do not have a common fiscal policy. That means that you can have countries like Greece that can go out and spend money as they like.
Yeah.
But the problem is that they will What's really the problem is down beneath that. You have a company, sorry, country like Germany, where you see the development in productivity gains per year will be plus 2 to 3%, but where it in Greece will be around about 0.5%. They're lucky. And if you bind these two countries together, you will always see that the one with the least productivity gain will, by the end of the day, start to owe the faster growing country money, because it will be easier to trade the German products to the Greece products for less and less all the time. So that's why it'll become more and more difficult for the Greeks to be part of that. And the only way you can solve that is by having transfers to Greece. So we simply say, okay, we're going to, and that will be the same as making a euro bond. And if you do not do that, well, then eventually, you know, see Greece ending up with a lot of debt problems. Guess what? That's what we have seen. And have we solved them? No. What we did is the Greek debt has increased over the last, since they made the big, you know, save selection of it. It has increased. What we did was we pushed down the interest rate on it. But by the end of it, of the day, you know, if the Greek debt keeps developing to the upside, which it does right now, you will not have a situation where they can maintain them. What they normally would do, you can let the air out, normally would be a devaluation of the Greek drachma. But they can't do that right now. So eventually, either we get euro bonds or we will see problems. And I think by the end of it, we'll see euro bonds. When that day comes and the Nordic countries, Northern Europe decide we want to be in a euro where we are contributing with more than what they are, well, then that's the day you're going to see the dollar could become a real strength. It doesn't make sense. I don't know if I explained that well. But
No. That makes I did know a little bit about this conversation before, but I just, again, it kind of validates a little bit of what I've been thinking about. Is, I mean, Alabama is essentially debtor as well relative to California, New York State.
Yeah.
And it's a similar dynamic but you do have the direct transfers there, whereas you don't have that in the European Union.
And another thing you also have is that I know a lot of people in the US who have moved, from coast to coast and lived in started living in another state. You'll not see a lot of people moving to Greece start working there. The other way around, you may see that, but people are more bound here to their national country, and that means that we are less flexible in the labor force, which is also a pressure on that.
Yeah, no, it's huge. Can't vote with your feet, so to say.
Yeah, exactly.
So if I try and sum up in what I think your views is, you're saying there's still a bit yet to run in stocks and the US dollar, but not too much. What were you saying, maybe 6 to 12 months?
Well, I think, I don't think we got that much. Okay. In terms of stocks, I think we got into Q1, maybe early Q2 of next year, yeah.
Okay, then a liquidity event and then a flood to US dollar, so a strong US dollar.
Yeah, that will last for some time, yes.
Some time, okay. And then a move into stagflation, where we will then see growth in commodities, and gold and Bitcoin, as you said as well.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. What is your view on Bitcoin, Henrik? I know you're not a huge fan of it, but do you kind of bundle it with everything else until we get into the stagflation environment?
Well, I see it as, Bitcoin and the 10,999 other cryptos is the very definition of a bubble. It's the very definition of, the mistakes that you see the central banks have done. It's not a problem right now for the US because the dollar is strengthening. But the moment we got inflation, the moment the dollar is not spoken for in demand, it'll become a problem. And that's why I cannot see in the long-term run how it'll be, you said will be based on that, a new monetary regime be based on Bitcoin. Well, why should the US give up the best that has ever happened to the US economy, which was the Bretton Woods and the, so to speak, takeover of the reserve currency in 1944, which has solidified the US position in the world? That will not be something that will be given up easily. The Chinese is not able to, in any form, shape, or manner right now, to challenge that. The Russians are not. The Europeans are not, because we cannot. We the euro is, you know, we have problems. We got, you know, Germany and Greece, which are two different countries, and that the rest of the, you know, Europe is somewhat the same. We are not. It's not a currency of the future as it looks right now. So I don't see any contenders to the dollar, and that's why it may be ugly, but it's the cleanest shirt out there. If it becomes a problem with Bitcoin, it can be a collector's item. It can be something that people think this is going to be the future of money going out in the future. I don't see why, if let's say you're right, and I think you are, if you see a crypto dollar, a crypto world currency coming up, which is part of my monetary reset, which will come after a stagflationary period, when the world starts to complain about inflation to the US. Then you'll see a monetary reset, and then you're going to hear, of course, we're going to get a crypto element to the world currency, and we may even see some reforms to how it's, you know, how we, the world currency is put together. I mean, it doesn't need to be all dollars, but I think the dollar is going to be a core part of it and a strong part of it. And as it has a crypto element, well, yeah, but if that comes up, would we think that they would like any kind of competition to that? Or would they outlaw any other cryptos in the world? And then people say they cannot. And I can assure you they can.
Well, it's an awful lot to take in. Elmer, are you... do you have any questions? It might be a bit of a...
No, it's just, I was thinking Henrik might upset a large part of the Twitter audience there with that kind of comment, but...
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I would love to hear, you know, I always want to go for the, you know, the good argument and having a good discussion. I mean, this is not about sentiments for me, by all means. I mean, if it goes to 1 million, that's fantastic. If it goes to 20 million, it's even more fantastic. And I'll hopefully be part of it. But I just cannot see, you know, show me how it can exist together, which maybe they will let it exist, you know, besides a crypto world currency. Okay, they can do that. And then you can say that we want to keep that because something, but for as long as it can be challenged by any, you know, next guy that comes up with the next, you know, beautiful coin and say, okay, I'm only going to make 1 million of these coins, whatever it is, that, you know, is that all it's got? Then why would you want to keep it? If you can do, and you got a new reformed world currencies, which cannot be printed to the amount that we see today. This has been done before, so I'm just saying, I think history will repeat itself, and I think what we see today is a understanding of the which I kind of not like, and say, well, yes, but the dollar is strengthening. Yeah, but the Bitcoin is going higher. Well, maybe because of a sentiments, maybe because people have also bought tulips at some point.
Indeed. Yeah, you're right about history repeating, and I think people forget. We forget very quickly, don't we, as well, I think. And the best way to predict the future is to look at the past, really, because I do think things do repeat for sure. And you'll look back on an event and think, why did we not see this coming? But, you know, the signs are there right now, and it's good to be aware of them. But look, thank you again, Henrik, for your time. It's been fantastic talking to you again. We're coming up just on an hour there, so thank you very much. I know you have your Zberg report. Is that every Sunday you put out some content on that? Is that right?
Yes, we do that. We have a weekly show on Sundays where I'll go through, you know, how I see the macro environment. We see we have some trades. We have, you know, a general outlook. And then we will also take in questions from the audience. And, of course, it's all recorded so people can watch it. And also on Wednesdays, I will also put up a few, a video on the development in markets. And that's what we do. And we'll try to see if we can steer clear of, you know, what I see as the deflationary bust. On Sunday, we had a clear message saying, okay, we think the markets are going to soar into this wave 5. So as we started off this week, it seems like it's probably on its initial phase.
Okay. Well, that's a nice message to finish on there. Elmer, do you have any final questions for Henrik?
Or you're good? I'm good. I found it very interesting, very compelling. Also very nice to listen to Henrik speak about this.
Yeah, excellent.
Very interesting.
Well, thank you very much, Henrik. And I wish you and everyone in your family a very happy Christmas and happy New Year. And maybe we can catch up again in 6 months' time and see where we are.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Per Ben and Russell. Tune in next time.